Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's Recovery from Relapse meeting. Today is Tuesday, the 8th of April, 2024. And it's our great delight to have Jeff Kay with us today. So Jeff came into OA around 10 years ago, so that would be 2015, a very rough maths, and he's currently absent by just over 4 years. And he's from Illinois but lives in California. So Jeff, it's over to you.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate that. Actually, I was thinking about it. I think it's probably a little longer than 10 years. It might even be like 12 years. Anyway, good morning, good afternoon, as it may be in some parts of the world. Good evening, and maybe others. Just want to first thank Rita for asking me to share today. Although when my alarm went off at 5:30 a.m. Pacific time, I was certainly not thinking about thanking Rita. I can tell you that. I don't see too many people I know in this, but I am definitely not what you would call an early riser, but definitely always grateful to be asked to be of service. And of course, when I am, if I don't have anything previously, I always say yes. So that's what I was taught here. I was also taught here by one of my first sponsors. When you're about to do something like this, the little quick little prayer to get it going is just cover me, God, I'm going in. So all right, we're good there. But yeah, so I was thinking about that. I'm actually I actually am in two other programs. So I got here, this was my third program. So those other programs, I'm about 16 and a half years in. So I think this is probably more like 12 years ago, actually. I probably first came to, I think it was about 4+ years when I first came here after my first other, which is interesting because this is the last one I got to, but it was certainly the first one that manifested itself. Since when I was a young kid, I was a heavy set kid. So I'll get some of the logistics out of the way. As Alan said, I'm currently about a little under 4.5 years. Of December 15th was 4 years of continuous abstinence for me. On my other programs, I have 16 plus years. There's a little bit of a gap. So I guess that's probably part of why Rita wanted me to share it today due to the theme. So I am currently 80 pounds down from my top weight. Actually, I'll throw a little background picture on there just so you guys can see what I used to look like. My God, look at, I thought my head was bigger even now, but so I say from my top known weight, because you see in that picture, I had stopped weighing myself quite a long time before that picture hit. So my top weight that I know was 300 pounds, but clearly in that picture I'm 6'1" as well. I don't know what that is in meters for people over the sea, but I think it's about 1.80 meter something. So as you can see, like, I got much bigger than that. So this was at the height of all of my three addictions kind of coming together to form this beautiful human being. But I can tell you that food and the obsession of food and the allergy, I guess, of the body, as well as the obsession of the mind, hit me at a very, very early age. Food was the first thing I reached for to comfort myself or to hurt myself. And there was a lot of both, I think, as I was a kid. And I was a very heavy kid, but really only for kind of a, so I wasn't like a very, very heavy kid, but I was always a chunky, heavy kid, right? And it was really for a much shorter time than I thought, to be honest with you. It's kind of wild to me when I look back, because when I was a kid, and that's when I developed this sense of who Jeff is, right? They have that. I still have that fat kid in my head. Even today, I have that fat kid in my head. I walk past a mirror and it's the wrong angle. I don't like what I'm seeing, I can tell you that. I have a, and that voice in my head, that little fat kid is, I don't want to say evil, but incredibly mean, incredibly degrading. Maybe some of you can relate to that, even now as I'm, and it manifests itself not just in body image and all those other things. I mean, it manifests itself in the diseased brain, right? The diseased mind manifests itself in you're not good enough, or you should just give up, or things of that nature. And it's quite ironic, because through this recovery, as I said, I'm in two other programs. Through these many years of recovery, like, I have found incredible levels of success professionally. I've been able to do things that I never imagined I'd be able to do. And I still sometimes I get a phone call from my boss, and the first thought that comes in my head is, "Oh, you're getting fired." And I've been at the same job now for, coming up on July, I'll be 17 years. So I got that job about 9 months into recovery, and I've been at it ever since, and I've excelled at it ever since, and it's all because of this program. It's all because of things that I were taught here. So it's really remarkable, But again, growing up, that having that kind of fat kid in my head, it was really interesting. I remember when I'll date myself when MySpace and first came about, and then Facebook, was actually developed. I remember when all the big thing was, all these groups, these all old groups of, my summer camp. The people formed a group, to like an alumni group, to everyone started adding pictures and memories and all this stuff. And I was horrified to have to look at my old self. And it was a shock. It was an absolute shock to see that not only was I not still that fat kid, I was in probably the best shape of my life when I was a teenager, because I was playing two sports, I was exercising constantly. I was swimming, I was playing basketball, I was lifting weights, I was playing football, I was doing all those things that, kids do. And I was in fantastic shape. And there was one particular picture. This is kind of silly, but for whatever reason, three of the boys, we went into the girls' tents. We were just hanging out during the day. We were just hanging out, and we decided to play a joke and put on the girls' jeans. Right. So clearly I'm much bigger than the girls' jeans that I'm putting them on. I'm 6 foot 1, right? So of course they're gonna fit tightly, and they're gonna be a little snug, and there's gonna be a little bit of skin hanging over the. But in my mind, someone took a picture of it, and I was like horrified, because in my mind I felt completely fat in these jeans, because like I felt like my rolls were hanging over the side of these jeans that I was showing. And that picture popped up on this alumni group. And I looked at it, and I was just mystified, because I mean, it looked like you would look if you were wearing a tight pair of jeans, like just a little bit of skin. It wasn't like I was this obese monster that my head made me out to be. And I wish at that point I'd learned that lesson. I wish that that was like, hey, you've got a problem with food. Maybe you should seek some help. Because I didn't, because for many, many years later, I was still in decent shape. And I would still, because I would still be exercising quite a bit, and very active, and I could do a lot of things, and I could probably get away with eating a lot of food that you wouldn't normally be able to do, just because I was very active, in sports and things. And then I moved out to LA when I was about 24, and my first year here, I was in the best shape of my life when I moved out here. And that very first year I came out here, I ended up finding someone. I dated someone for the first year, and within that year, I gained well over 100 pounds. And from that point on, for the rest of my adult life, I was battling food again. I was battling weight loss again. I was battling that, and this was again before, in my case, the drugs, the alcohol kicked in. Also, I'm a compulsive gambler as well. If any of you have any issues with that, I'm happy to talk about that offline. Obviously, this isn't the point of this meeting, but because of those programs, I actually got here. Thank God for that. But it was a long journey, and into my 20s, and through until I got here, 12, until I got to my first 12-step meeting was, 12 years later. It wasn't until I was 36, and the tornado of devastation that occurred, and the hopelessness and the helplessness, and I mean, it was really just like a tornado of addiction that just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And it was interesting, because you would think, being a drug addict as well, that that would have subsided my food addiction, because the drugs I were doing were not the type that make you hungry. So here I am, this 300+ pound mountain of a guy, because I'm also pretty broad, and I'm a tall dude, and I would walk into the after party, like, and all my friends knew how much drugs I'd done, and what types of drugs I was doing. And here I am walking into the party with like a piece of pizza or a churro from 7-Eleven, and people are looking at me like I'm a pinky unicorn. Like, how are you eating right now? How is that even possible? That you could have stopped through the Taco Bell drive-through, on that much, on those, on that many substances that cause you not to eat, and that was just the story of my most of my adulthood, from I would say 24 to about 30. It wasn't 24 to, it was a pretty quick, I guess, devastation, because I wasn't a drinker, I wasn't a drug user, but the food was always there, so those other things caught up to me quickly. And from like 24 to about 30, the drinking was more so, it wasn't as much drugs. And then at about 30, I started drugs. And then from 30 to 36, it was just an incredible downward spiral. And like I said, through this time, I'm continuing to gain weight. As you see here, this was a picture of me in a bar. And this was at my top weight. I mean, I've got to be, I don't know, 325, 350 in that picture. I mean, I was massive. I was on, the party pack for the big guys. I was on blood pressure meds, and I'm now pre-diabetic in this picture. I've got, I'm on triglycerides are, 8,600 plus, so everything that can possibly start to, happen was starting to happen. And I was a ticking time bomb. And as this is happening on the outside, like even there, you see him smiling. Like I was that guy that you didn't know how miserable I was. I was just, I was the, I remember when I first got into program, I was in the big book and I was looking for myself in the description, and the description that hit me the most was the life of the party, but the loneliest guy in the room. I couldn't sit still on my own skin. I had to be out. But yet I was miserable even when I was out. There were times when I was sitting out, like in a bar, eating chicken wings at the bar, and just couldn't sit at home by myself. I was kind of the opposite of the isolator. Like I isolated amongst you. Like I fed off of people to make me feel a little better about myself. And the truth is, most of them didn't make me feel better about myself. They were just fake people that I collected throughout this whole history. And it got to a point where I was just so sad and depressed and unhappy. And then, I'd go take some happy pills and go back out and collect more people. I collected people, it was, it's probably, I probably could have used the program for people collecting, if that was an addiction, I was definitely the king of it. And, this whole time, I would reach, obviously I had more things to reach for, but food was just always there, and I would take pride in it. If we'd go out to dinner, I remember we a group of us would go out to dinner and for someone's birthday, and we'd go to like an all-you-can-eat, like Fogo, which is like an all-you-can-eat, like Brazilian steakhouse, and we'd have a competition who could eat the most amount. So, I'll give you a guess. Especially amongst in this crew, it was like a bunch of actors and and really these good-looking, like in-shape guys that I met at the bars. All the bartenders, I was like best friends with all the bartenders, and all this stuff. And the crazy thing is, that. Shocking that I would win that, that eating competition, and then, be kind of proud for the, and then go home and just be miserable and be sad and be depressed and shame and just live in shame, and, all these, I hung out with a lot of people who were in good shape, and it was even worse, because, they, hey, big guy, everyone had a nickname for me, big guy, what's up? I had a couple guys from Atlanta. They called me Biggin, that was like a southern version of big guy, So yeah, I think it just this like continual spiral downward and sadness. And I really I guess at some point, even it was, I wouldn't say that suicide, but just like how am I going to go on living like this? If, like it wasn't like I want to kill myself, but it was like, I just can't keep doing this, And somehow I kept doing it for many years after that. I had many instances where I came home and like, I remember coming home drunk and like, of course, and high, but of course, stop and get a huge burrito on the way home. And then like, I'd come home and I'd pass out on the couch and I'd wake up like clutching a half-eaten burrito, with like sour cream and salsa dripping down my bare chest. And then, of course, what would I do? I mean, I'm going to finish the burrito. I mean, come on. Like, I'm not going to waste the food. Like, so I would do things like that. I mean, I remember coming back always on the drive back. There was a, like I said, a burrito or like a Jack in the Box, which is a burger place out here. And, I'm stopping off and I mean, 5-6,000 calories worth of food minimum, on my way back from Hollywood. So, and on and on and on, right? I think a lot of us can relate to this. So how much time do I have left, by the way? Just curious. I haven't hit the 20-minute mark yet. I guess they didn't tell me. I don't think. Okay,
You're good for another 9.5 minutes before your 20 minutes, Jack.
Okay, so I did miss it. So good, perfect. So let me get into recovery. So obviously this keeps going on until I'm about 36, and finally I get to another program first. I get to Gamblers Anonymous first, and then about 4 months after that, I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. And now I'm not only abstinent from gambling, but sober. My life is getting exponentially better, although it's obviously the first year recovery and I'm just a hot mess. But I'm reaching for food even more and more. And I can't, I still am doing this. And this was a battle. Also, at this point, I'm also smoking, a pack of cigarettes a day. Like I still have other addictions that are going on because I'm masking it. But what was happening with me is when I got to program, I was so absolutely miserable that I was willing to just surrender completely. And I just said, I need help. And I was willing to do whatever. I found a couple of guys in those rooms and I was willing to follow direction. I was willing to do whatever they took me. So I got here about 4 years into that. And it was a battle, right? It was obviously a battle for me to even get here. And it's amazing because, I had continuous abstinence for long-term recovery. As I said, I'm 16 years plus now in those programs, and I've only got 4+ here. And I got to these rooms the night after I hit my bottom. I had binged so badly that I was bloated and gaseous and feeling sick to my stomach. And I hopped in my shower and I just laid in the bathtub with the water rolling on me. And I just was like uncomfortable, and I just acid reflux and everything that comes with them. I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And I said, my life is getting so much better because of these other programs. Like, man, the last thing I wanted to do was go to a third program. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And I thought to myself, and the actual thought came to me was, yeah, that's what you have to do. Look what these other programs have done for you spiritually and mentally and all these other things. It's time to take care of this. And that morning I went to a meeting that was a Monday morning on the west side of Los Angeles. There used to be a place where they had a lot of OA meetings called The Cottage. And it was a 10 a.m. meeting on a Monday. And I walked in there and it was me and 20 women. And as we know, there was a little more of a female dominated, meeting. And I walked in and it was not only 20 women, but a lot of them were very attractive. And I just sat there and I almost walked out because I was just so full of shame. I didn't, I was like, seriously going to share in front of this group. And again, that thought occurred to me, yes, just go in there. You're here. You're not here. This isn't, 12 steps isn't, to find a companion here in the first aid. It's to walk in here and bare your soul and get help. And I cried that first meeting and I just let it out. And thank God I did, because there were, three or four women who took me under the wing. They took my number. They introduced me to other people in the group. They introduced me to some other men in the group as well. Then I went to a few more meetings and I found a sponsor. And right away I was, I again, I knew what to do. Take direction, get out of my own way, follow a plan. And I lost 40 pounds pretty quickly. And I would plateau at that 40 pound. And then what happened with me is I would start playing with my food. I was off white flour and recreational sugar, which I still am, by the way. That's been continuous, for most of these probably 12 years. But I would go to gluten free. I would go to 100% whole wheat. I would, and I could, eat a whole gluten free pizza, and it would be abstinent, right? And I through this battle, I would lose or gain, that 40 pounds up and down, especially 20 or 30 of it, and still remain abstinent. And it was miserable. And it was like that for many years, in and out. I remember one point I had 6 months abstinence, and I got some resentments for the group that I was in, and I left. But I continued my abstinence for up to 364 days. I was still counting time, even though I wasn't going to program. And I consider my and I and at that 364th day, I was at a buddy's bar, completely sober. It was St. Patty's Day, and I was the victim of a drive-by milkshake. They made a non-alcoholic St. Patty's Day milkshake, and they put it in front of me because they knew I wasn't, hey, it's non-alcoholic. Hey, here you go. And of course, I took a sip of it, and I was off and running. Of course, 30, 40 pounds later, here we go again, right? And finally, I said, I can't again. I found myself again after a binge in that same place in the bathtub again. I guess that was kind of my safe haven, just saying to myself, come on, dude, like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? And that was a little over 4 years ago. And I needed to get real clear with my food. So for anyone who's struggling with recovery, but first and foremost for me is I need to get real clear with my food, and I had to get myself out of the way. So I heard a group of guys using the terms like sober eating and eating soberly, like compared, and that made sense to me, like, because especially with the other programs I'm in. And so what I did was I just turned my entire will and life and my decision making over to a sponsor. We stripped my food down and really got really clear about what my alcoholic foods are, really clear about what my meal plan looks like. I used to say things like my food's getting wonky, and my meal plan is my abstinence, but it didn't make sense, right? If I'm eating outside of my meal plan, then how am I abstinent? So for me, again, this is for me, and there's many other ways to do this in a way. I had to get real clear about what my food plan looked like, how many times a day I was eating, what those meals looked like, what the amounts were, right? I don't weigh, I eat out plenty, so I'm not always weighing and measuring, but if I'm home, I'll weigh and measure, just to make it easier. Also, I need to do that in the beginning so that I knew what a portion looked like. Because to me, a 20 or 30 ounce ribeye at a steakhouse was a portion, so I had to get real clear about that, obviously. So I got real specific also about which foods trigger me. And that was the beginning, right? Just turning over my will, turning over the trust to another human being, turning over my food plan, so to speak, was the beginning, getting on my way. And by the way, if I even change like a protein, and I'm also accountable. So I text or email my sponsor the morning of or the day of what I'm going to eat that day. And then I also send pictures, and I'm on a group with a bunch of pictures. And the accountability really helps me, right? And then if I even change something, or if I need to change something, I just text it. Most of the stuff I change, 99% of the time, is already pre-approved. So it's just to be accountable, because a lot of times my sponsor doesn't even get back to me. If it's something that's a little bit of a drastic change, then I'll wait for a response, or I'll call another fellow who has a similar food plan to me and get it cleared. So that way I'm real clear about that. And then the second thing for me in maintaining this abstinence is a spiritual routine. And I can tell you that, I was raised Jewish, and I would consider myself maybe a recovering Jew these days. But I always had a problem with the kind of Old Testament fire and brimstone God. It just never sat well with me. And then, ironically, I was actually, when I was younger, I was definitely connected more so to religion. I was active. I went to Hebrew school and Sunday school as a camp counselor, a teen tour leader. And as my addictions kicked in, the further my addictions went, the further away I went from God. And the further I went from God, the deeper my addictions went. But what I needed to find here was a God of my understanding. And that's what's so beautiful about these programs, is that's exactly what these are. We all get to choose or develop a God of our understanding. For me, it started with you, with the group, right? Group of Degenerates, GOD. And it quickly, it not quickly, but it's developed into more. To like I live in LA, so going to the beach is a spiritual event for me, and I go there quite frequently to get my mind straight, and it's a meditative state for me. But there's an energy that I tap into just between you. So when two or more of us come together for the purpose of recovery, we're in the midst and the greats of a higher power. By the way, someone needs to tell me if I'm over because I can't see the timer. So I could probably talk for an hour. So you got to shut me up. Maybe April, I can see you.
Jeff, you've got 5 minutes now.
Oh, wow. Okay, good. Time is such a weird thing. So 5 minutes. Thank you. So I have developed a routine for myself, you know, which for me includes the first thing I do in the morning when I wake up is make my bed. That was handed to me on my very first meeting. And ironically, it's funny because I went home to visit my parents with about 9 months of sobriety and abstinence in my other programs. By the way, you know, I highly recommend you check out some other programs. I don't trust you if you're not working at least 24 steps. You know, so maybe, but just kidding. I'm not judging. Just, you know, it was a journey for me to keep peeling the layers. But I went home with about 9 months. You know, my mom understood addiction. My parents were both food addicts, neither of them drugs or alcohol. But my mom was 5'4". Her big issue was probably 240. I mean, I remember when I was a kid going to Weight Watchers with her when I was heavy, and we went together, and she had a lifelong struggle. She went back to Weight Watchers about 10, 12 years ago, and has actually kept about an 80-pound weight loss. So I'm very happy for that. She looks amazing. She's 83 and she looks like she's in her late 60s. You know, she stayed out of the sun. It's pretty, you know, my dad still struggles with his weight, but they're both hanging in there. So pretty, very happy about that. But I went home and visited, and I remember I woke up. My mom just could not understand that her son, I was like the good son. My brother was the one who caused all the problems drinking when he was in high school. And, you know, he turned out okay. He's just a workaholic. So I'm the one who, I was like the good kid who, you know, went to college and fitness graduated and was good at school and did all this stuff. So they couldn't wrap their head around the fact that I was an addict. It was very hard for them to understand. And they were scared and worried, of course, as parents are. But I went home and my mom told me years later, she goes, she knew something had changed when she looked in my room that morning, the first morning, and saw that my bed was made. I hadn't made my bed in 36 years. She's like, something is different about my son, you know? And today, because of these programs and because of the fact that I wake up, I make my bed, I read. I have like four little, you know, data time books, one for OA, one for AA, one for GA, and one, you know, as Bill sees it. I read these every morning and then say a few prayers, like the Serenity Prayer and the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. This whole thing, this whole routine takes me about 5 minutes. And my head is straight and my mind is ready to go. And if I don't do it, I'm off. I'm a little rushed. I feel a little ragged. And I have to stop and do it. And then when I, you know, and I also look at my day and the day ahead and I say a little prayer to be of service to my fellows, be of service to my fellow coworkers, right? To stay out of self-seeking, selfish interests, and to be of service to others. So I do this little routine and it gets me right. Like I was told early on that we wake up 12 steps behind everybody else. So, you know, when I wake up, I got to get to God before my head gets to me. Like I've heard some great ones, you know, like in the morning. And I can tell you that I still don't, it's hard for me to wrap my head around like a deity, right? And again, you know, good for you if you do and you have that. For me, again, it was just from that childhood, it just made it very hard for me. But I don't need it. You know, I pray to the universe. I pray to the energy. I pray to the source. I pray to all of you. Like individuals come and go, but the group remains. So if you're struggling with the concept of God, you know, it's just a word we use, right? It can mean many things to many people. So for me, you know, the connection I get when I'm doing something like this, or when I come out of a meeting, or when I pick up the phone, even text someone or call someone, that connection to me is God, right? And it's gone beyond that for me. But if you're struggling, it's a perfectly good way to start, right? Use the group to, you know, go to a coffee, go to a lunch, like get in the middle of this thing, because that is what has been the main difference for me, right? Getting super clear with my food, being accountable for my food, right? And having a routine, and also the connection. Right. And then of course the 9 tools that we talked about earlier at the beginning of this meeting, when you put all those together, it helps, you know, to recover from relapse, which I was a, and you know, I didn't relapse in my other programs. I relapsed once. I flipped a coin and turned my time back, and I've been continuous ever since. But the food has been the tough one for me. It's the oldest. It's the deepest, right? It's the one most connected to self. And so I need to do all these things in order to stay abstinent. So I hope any of that made sense. I think it's my time. So I want to thank all of you. Thank Rita again, and hope some of that made sense for somebody connected.